And everything I'm going to say today is based on joint work with Phil Sang-Yu, you all know. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to try and explain today this work that tries to unite the work of Arinkin and Gates-Gori on the sort of a refined formulation of the geometric Langlands correspondence with the story of Kapustin and Witten, saying where geometric Langlands correspondence fits into a story of S duality in twisted n equals 4 supersymmetric Yang Mills. So I'm going to start out by telling you something about what geometric Langlands is and reminding you what the Kapustin-Witten story, how it goes, and then I'll start to talk about how the singular support conditions appear in this story. So let's start out with an intro to geometric Langlands. So the main players in this talk will fix G is going to be a reductive group, and sigma is going to be a smooth compact curve, both over the complex numbers. And the geometric Langlands correspondence is a statement about sheaves on certain moduli spaces that are built out of this data. The main players in this talk are going to be Bunji of sigma, which is the moduli stack of algebraic G bundles on sigma. And the other main player is going to be flat G, which is the moduli of flat G bundles on sigma G bundles with a flat connection. So in its best hope form, in its somehow most optimistic form, the geometric Langlands conjecture relates certain categories of sheaves on these spaces. I'm going to write best hope. Explain that in a minute. So there's an equivalence of categories. Between D modules on Bunji of sigma and a different kind of sheaves, quasi-coherent sheaves on flat bundles for a different group. So here, flat G check. Here, G-check is the Langlands dual group to G, the group where the root data is dualized. So this relates to two different moduli spaces with two different groups and two different kinds of sheaves on these moduli spaces. And there's a lot more in the conjecture. It's supposed to satisfy lots of, like, preserving nice properties on the two sides. Nice structure onto the sides. Okay. And so I'm going to, let me tell you sort of in a very rough way how to think about this. So we can think about this as a very fancy version, fancy meaning maybe non-abelian, and categorified of the Fourier transform. And so one of the structures this should have is that somehow nice objects on the left-hand side, nice objects in D modules and G sigma, are indexed by points in a dual space, in points in flat G check. And so what I mean, there are nice objects here and they'll correspond to skyscraper sheaves on the right-hand side. So you should think of these nice objects. What does nice objects mean? It means they're eigenfunctions, eigensheaves. What's the eigenfunctions? For natural symmetries. And the point that they correspond to is its eigenvalue in an appropriate sense. Okay. So this is the very sort of cartoony picture of how you might think about this conjecture. Yeah.
How much of the duality is captured just by these eigensheaves? Meaning, if somebody gives you all these eigensheaves as a sheaf on flat G,
yeah, you could imagine.
Enough.
Yes, I think you could imagine. This is only very heuristic, but you should imagine being taking these like some direct integral maybe of over this space of flat G. Of these eigensheaves, you should be able to build any objects on the right-hand side, on the left-hand side. But that's all very heuristic. So one thing I should say is that if G is abelian, this is literally a Fourier transform. This is literally a Fourier-Mackay transform. So the heuristic is somehow true in this example in a very sort of precise sense. So the abelian case, this is a theorem of Lohmann and Rothstein independently. But the other thing that you have to note, if G is not abelian, then the conjecture is false. And there's a technical, maybe like a functional analytic reason why this conjecture can't be true. And this is the reason. So if you have a parabolic subgroup of G with Levy L, and so you should think of, you know, block upper triangular matrices and block diagonal matrices, then there's a functor on either side. There's a functor from D modules on bun L, sigma, to D modules on bun G, by Pohl-Pirsch. And this functor is called Eisel. This is called the geometric Eisenstein functor. You pull back to P, and then you push forward down to G. And so one of the, I said this preserves a nice structure on the two sides. There's likewise, there's a similar thing, similar on the other side, on the quasi-coherent side. One of the nice structures that's supposed to be preserved is that this equivalence commutes with these geometric Eisenstein series functors.
Is the data parabolic, same on both sides?
Yeah, you can match up, you can match up a parabolic to a parabolic on the other side. That's not just given by like subsets of simple roots, and there's some pairing. Okay. So this is one of the structures this is supposed to be compatible with. And as it's written, this can never happen. And the reason is, like somehow this like this functor Eisel on the D module side is nice. But the other thing, I'll check on the quasi-co side is not nice. And the sense in which it's not nice is it doesn't preserve compact objects. And if you're working with quasi-coherent sheaves, then the quasi-coherent sheaves on stacks, the not proper, the star pullback of these quasi-coherent sheaves doesn't preserve compact objects.
Why is this supposed to relate this to Eisenstein?
I don't know. I don't know if there's the motivation coming from the sort of number theoretic story that this is supposed to be compatible with some Langlands functoriality.
Basically, I can imagine doing realizing either of the two by some interfaces with English theory.
Yeah.
But those interfaces will not be as dual by any stretch of imagination in the Langlands.
Do you know if I can take this interface? Do you have a description of that score?
For some groups, I can, but it would typically not be. For example, SO4, SO3 is an example I could write down to do one.
I don't know from the physical point of view why you would expect this. I don't have a good answer to that.
That's fine, but then if you go on the other side, you get this by formulating the stuff.
Yes.
So you might get some nice sheaf on the product of which you've not. Like the simplest UN case, I would have gotten some, like UN minus one. I would have said that on the quasi coherent shift, the dual would be the sort of Dirac Higgs bundle of the foot.
I don't know a good answer to your question as to why you'd expect this. So.
Yeah. Are you going to sufficiently derive all the quasi coherent co are the same?
No, they're different.
Okay, we're in a world where those are different. So then you can fix this problem by scratching out the Q and writing it in?
That's what I'm about to say, yeah.
Okay. Then why did you want to write Q?
Because people wrote this down before they invented INCO, or before they invented the sort of the six functors formalism for INCO.
Okay.
Like, this is in Gatesgory's, he says one of his motivations for like developing this formalism for INCO is exactly to fix this.
I mean, there is some problem, which is that the notion of coherent sheaf is a much more restrictive notion. Like, kind of any sort of reasonable object in algebraic geometry has a quasi-co.
Mm-hmm.
Co, it's like not reasonable except for special types of geometric objects.
And as skyscrapers, co.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So Theo's giving the game away as to.
Sorry.
That's okay. So
then you would have to restrict the left hand side.
Well, this is. I'm gonna get to some of this. So there's another sheaf theory. The idea, due to Gatesgory and independently to Theo, is to replace Q-co with int-co. And so this is the incompletion of the category of coherent sheaves. So this has. Now a nice, in this sense, six functors formalism.
I mean, I would have never actually done this because I hate it.
Okay.
Like, Q-co is just a much better behaved object, usually.
So do you still have this Eisenstein functor?
Yeah, you still have this Eisenstein. So you now have a better behaved Eisenstein functor. You now use the shriek pullback of incoherent sheaves, and this now preserves complex objects.
Is there some first naive? Is there some like piece of geometry we can tell us that will allow us to see that it's the original functor is not nice?
I don't think that I can come up with on the fly. The answer I'm sure is yes, but I don't like. So what's going to happen is it's going to be if you have like stacks that are not proper when you try and look at the star pullback. I mean, do you have a good example, Phil?
Is it pullback?
Sorry.
Problem is Fletcher's but not smooth. And
yeah.
That's a.
So yeah. In general, if you're not derived, quasi-co of a solvable group tends to just not to be compact or like generated by compact projectives, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like but I don't know about compacts, like no projective objects.
Okay.
Well, it's definitely
but I mean, if I take one H and I like the curve, like it's a nice vector bundle, I can just go to something else.
Well, that one's going to be smooth. So, you need to take flat G to get something singular, and you need to have a non-abelian group to get something that's not smooth.
Okay.
So, in this point of view, there won't be.
Plus, I was in the first.
Yeah, this problem doesn't occur for an abelian group. This conjecture is true for.
And after you put this, Eisenstein goes to Eisenstein.
What do you mean? Oh yeah, right. So you mean in this conjecture, Eisenstein goes to Eisenstein?
Yes.
Yes. But, I mean, this conjecture is a conjecture. It's not.
It's hidden.
I mean, even with the corrected version.
The corrected version.
The expectation for which Gates-Gori has various pieces of evidence, like partial evidence, is that it includes that Eisenstein goes to Eisenstein.
But
well,
a special case
would
be
about
opens, like the fact that D is
open.
I mean, that's just
bringing. Supposedly, Su21 would be an example.
Yeah, so for a GLM, GL2, the corrected version of this thing is a theorem. Right? It does send Eisenstein to Eisenstein. Sorry, I don't know how to resolve your.
No, very concrete, like, supposedly the Eisenstein. So the Eisenstein factor in the coherent side is not supported on the product of the GLM. It's supported on some sub minus for the product of plus as you choose a plus.
I don't understand the. What do you mean when it's supported?
Concretely.
The kernel for the Eisenstein series functor. I don't know.
Sorry, I should not be there. We can later.
Okay. So this change fixes this functional analysis issue, but we need to do something more. The example of the curve P1. This was worked out by Vincent Lafourgue. Tells us that int code of flat G check is now too big to match up to the category of D modules.
So we're taking P1 without punctures?
P1 without punctures, yeah. So this is very stacky.
Yes.
I mean, very derived. So this is a derived stack. So if you don't think of the drive thing, this is just like BG check. But if you remember the drive directions, there's an extra line in degree one. Yeah. And so what to fix this by enlarging quasi code, not all the way to int code, but in the minimal way. Making all these Eisenstein P's preserve compact objects. So when you do this, the result.
So you're striking out intco as well, is that?
Yeah, so now we're striking out intco as well. So intco is now struck out. And the result is the category which I'll explain later in the talk. I'll write it and then I'll say some words. Intco, this is intco with nilpotent singular support. So this is an intermediate category in between quasi-co and intco. And the equivalence is, the conjecture is now that this is the conjecture of Lorenkin and Gates-Gori. So this is now equivalent to D modules on Bungie in a way compatible with Eisenstein and compatible with many other structures on the two sides. And so in the rest of the talk, I want to tell you what this means, this intco nilpotent singular support, and tell you like how this arises from a physical perspective.
So did Gates-Gori really just sort of do what this way that you said? Like they just were like, we're going to go find the category that minimally solves this problem?
That's how they postdoc justify it. I don't know that the actual like the process of discovery was in this order, but when they explain the construction, this is all they say. They say, we want to work with the minimal enlargements of quasi-code to a category that's so that all of the net pullbacks that you need for like a Levy and its parabolic preserve compact objects, and they prove that the resulting category is this category with no bones and inner supports. I mean, there's alternative sort of motivation coming from number theory that you need to, in the Langlands correspondence in number theory, you need to keep track of some Arthur parameters. You need to take not just a single like Galois representation, but an Arthur packet in order to have some Langlands reciprocity. So there's an alternative motivation there. So I'll very quickly remind you of the Kapustin-Witten story. I'll try not to go too quickly to for those people in the audience that aren't familiar with it. I think a lot of people are. Anyways. So what's the connection between these with geometric Langlands duality and supersymmetric gauge theory? Well, work in n equals 4 supernormals theory, and Kapustin and Witten constructed a CP1 family of topological twists. So that with like at the point 0, 1 in CP1. So when you reduce on a Riemann surface, the result you get at the point 0, 1 is the B model with target. All right, now loc G sigma. So this is now the moduli of representations of pi 1 into G. This is very similar to, but not the same as, what I called flat G before, in that it's analytically, but not algebraically equivalent. Equivalent to flat G. I'll mention this again in a second. At the antipodal point, you get the A model with target Bungee. Okay. So,
you mean T star Bungee or T sheet?
Yeah. Thanks. Okay, what's more, they argued that S duality exchanges the theory at 0, 1 with gauge group G check with the theory at 1, 0 with gauge group G. So S duality is a duality between these theories with gauge group G and its Langlands dual, and it acts antipodally on this CP1 of twists. And so what do you get? In the category of boundary conditions in these two theories, well, here you get quasi-coherent sheaves on loc G-check sigma. And here you get D-modules on Bungee. And so S duality should provide an equivalence between these two categories. And so there's two issues if you want to really draw a bridge between this and the story in geometric representation theory, which you might be able to
one
see.
One would complain that these two categories are the boundary conditions for the two-dimensional theory.
So the boundary conditions for theory.
It's not clear that it
reduced.
But this quantity will only apply to the ones that come from four dimensions. So you could have smaller categories of things, the things that have a four dimensional moment, which are fully matched to each other.
Or maybe this is going to be related to what I'm going to say later. I'm not sure. We can talk about it. There's two issues with this story. The first is that we don't see the algebraic structure. On flat G check sigma. The geometric Langlands conjecture is a conjecture in algebraic geometry. This category, the geometry of this moduli space and the category of quasi-coherent sheaves depends on, for instance, the algebraic structure on sigma and the algebraic structure on this moduli space induced from it, which... if you just write loc G check, this is independent of the algebraic structure on sigma. If you write flat G check, it would depend.
Again, you asked for the boundary conditions come from four dimensions. I would complain about this. Because a lot of equations you can write down in log G that defines planes in log G would never appear from four dimensions. In four dimensions, the things you can do are very algebraic and they connect tree.
So maybe the point is that this statement on the top board, which might be from Kapust and Witten, needs a footnote. G sigma remembers the algebraic structure already there.
Well, I think if you try to track where this part of the condition should come from in 4D.
Well, what I was going to say is that in a paper
if you could really think about this as two dimensional theories which are mirror of each other, forgetting about the four dimensional origin, then this would be perfectly fine. One could complain that these two-dimensional theories are a bit singular if you don't think about the four-dimensional origin, and that's fine. But another complaint is that there is more structure if you remember the four-dimensional origin of things. So there is a refinement of this statement where you only match things that come from four dimensions in a specific way. And that refinement probably remembers the algebraic structure.
Yeah.
In particular, in four dimensions, I would really think about flat rather than log, because you are tracking constraints on your connection. It's literally the connection of your four dimensions.
Yeah, what I was going to say is in the paper with Filsang from a few years ago, we explained why one should see this particular algebraic structure when thinking about this moduli space classically as coming from like reduction from the 4D theory. I don't know. So this might be. I think we don't think about it in the same way as the way that you're thinking about it. But we have some sort of explanation as to where the right algebraic structure appears. Okay. The second.
It was not a complaint. Your statement was complaining.
Yeah.
People said before your statement.
Okay. So the second thing that one might complain about this statement is that we're only seeing the best hope, which is false. And so what I wanted to tell you about today is that if we remember the structure of the action of the 4D local observables on these categories, and we look at only those boundary conditions which are compatible with a choice of vacuum in the 4D theory, then we can see this Oehrenkamp-Gates-Gorrie nil potent singular support condition. So this we discussed. Some of you probably have seen Filsang talk about this here in the past, the point one, and I was going to today try to tell you something about point two, where we can see these Oehrenkamp-Gates-Gorrie singular support conditions by remembering something about the action of the 4D local observables. So this is maybe related to your observation.
So the thing that the main conjecture is illustrating that this two-dimensional mirror symmetry is not working.
I mean, it may be in a Betti context. So there's like Now, even in a Betti context, you need these corrections. So you can work, there is a statement that involves loc g-check rather than flat g-check in this recent work on Betti Langlands by Benzvi and Nadler, Benzvi and Ewan, where they've proven some parts of this, where they make a geometric Langlands thing that is conjecture, which is purely topological and only depends on sigma as a two-manifold. But even there, you still need to get a true statement for a non-abelian group. You still need some version of the nilpotent singular support condition. So somehow, this issue, there's more than one form of a conjecture based on this work, but there's no way of getting around number two.
Is it correct that the polynomials are associated with the place where the manifold is singular?
Yes, exactly. So because if you're, or the place where the moduli space is singular, if your moduli space is smooth, quasi-co and inco are the same and everything collapses, which is why there isn't a problem for an abelian group. And the difference between quasi-co and inco has to do with the singularities on the stack.
I think it's physically, this two-dimensional theory does not actually make sense by itself, unless you think it's coming from the precise of the singularity.
Okay.
Is it or not? I don't know. So, I mean, if you think about somehow a gauge linear sigma model with infinite dimensional gauge group, would it give you the correct fix to?
I don't know what you have in mind exactly.
I mean, log g is an infinite dimensional symplectic quotient, right?
Uh-huh.
But is there some natural way to put brains in symplectic quotients which would give you the correct thing? Or do you really need to go to 4?
I think we can do something like that. Even in that context, once you have an infinite dimensional quotient thing, I think we can choose. We can basically try to do the same thing we are doing in that context and. Mm-hmm. We can get some defined version of whatever it's considered in case being a smaller.
Okay. That's okay. So I've got to tell you what I owe you an explanation of what this INCO nilpotent singular support means, and then I'll talk about this. But I'm going to have to cut some stuff out. So no, it's okay. It's good. So singular support conditions. So how do these arise? Okay. So the first thing I want to say is just a very abstract construction, which is that the category, if B is any DG category, and I'm thinking about the category of boundary conditions in some topological field theory, there's a natural action of the monoidal category of modules for the Hostial cochains of the category. And so what is this? This is the algebra of endomorphisms or endofunctors of the identity of B. So this has the property that this is universal in the sense that if any monoidal DG category acts on B, it acts through a monoidal functor into this category. Okay.
When you said universal state is having a defense, but I know what universal state is meaning.
Okay. I'm rushing. So if I take B to be the category of intercoherent sheaves on some X, and this is going to be like a nice enough derived stack, it won't matter what this means, and we'll want to take it to be the stack flat G. So this is a module for partial cochains for itself, which I'll just write as hc of x for short. And roughly speaking, so very roughly, singular support is the support with respect to this action. To say something a little less rough, there's a map from a nicer algebra. I'll write it and I'll tell you what it is, into hc of x. This is really only true if x is like an affine derived scheme. Some adjectives. Which is, and this is close to an equivalence, where this thing x, we take the -1 shifted cotangent space of x, and then we take the classical part. So this is a derived object, and we're just taking the classical part. Okay. So on the level of functions, just taking h0. Now, somehow working with this functions on sing x instead of with the Hostetler cochains is like a, you should think of as a mathematical convenience rather than, and this map is somehow funny. It involves some degree shift by 2, which really, to do this properly, you really need to keep track of that degree shift by 2. That's what you're concerned with. You're saying that this should be a T star 1 rather than a T star minus 1.
No, I have other concerns.
Okay.
That wasn't my concern. I hadn't noticed that yet.
Okay. You can tell me what your concern is if you like.
Well, my concern is that this is an extremely fragile, but taking the classical part is, of course, an extremely fragile thing that you can't do in your families.
Yeah.
And so that was my concern.
Okay. That's a very legitimate concern. And I think somehow, I think it's right to be concerned about that, and I think it's like going to be a coincidence that of the exact stacks that we take, that this isn't going to matter in this example. And for a really sort of a good, like theory, in general, like the right theory really should involve the full like Hostetler cochains without taking any of this classical part or anything like that. And this is the thing that this is. A construction that gives you a nice sort of geometric story, but it's not the best possible construction. Okay. So this algebra for like an affine derived scheme, this is a sort of a fairly straightforward algebra to think about. It's generated by H1 of the tangent space, of the tangent complex, as a module over O of X. Okay. So let me tell you the definition. So if you choose y inside of thing x, a closed subset, then the category of sheaves, incoherent sheaves with singular support in y, so singular support contained in y, you take incoherent sheaves as a module for quasi-co of sing x using the action of this algebra on the category, the tensor product with those sheaves which are supported on y. And so this definition is valid for it's an affine derived scheme. Like in general, we make the definition, we use a smooth cover by affine derived schemes. Okay.
That's okay with this
general. Yes. This is the fact that this is okay is, I guess, a theorem that Lorenkin and Gates scoring, but they can make this, they make this construction work. Okay. They prove a lot of sort of functoriality results. They check that these things behave nicely with respect to pullback and push forward with respect to these maps under appropriate hypotheses. And it requires quite a lot of work. Okay. So how should we think about this? Maybe in, well, I can say it in either order. Let's say how we should think about this first from the point of view of quantum field theory. So this category of incoherent sheaves, this is a version of the category of boundary conditions in a 2D B model with target X. And what does this, very roughly speaking, like this O of sing X is the 2D local operators. So approximately equal 2D local operators in the 2DB model. A better model really should remember more of the, shouldn't do this bad thing where we take the classical part and should remember these degree shifts by two. There's something else that I wanted to say, and I ended up skipping. I'll come back to it in a second. So I've nearly told you what this Lorenkin-Gates-Skori category is. I just have to tell you what NG is. So what is NG? I've told you its name. It's the global nilpotent cone. But what actually is it? Well, it sits inside. I've got to give you a subset of the scheme of singularities. And so let me describe this for you. So this equals on its closed points are triples in amplify, where this is a flat bundle and phi is a flat section. So it's a flat section of the coadjoint bundle. Section. And so inside of here, I'll just take the triples, the enablify, where when I take this phi and I evaluate at some point, so here X is a point in sigma. So this is an element of the dual to the Lie algebra defined up to gauge transformations, so defined up to the adjoint action. And I'm going to ask it to be is nilpotent. I'll ask it to be nilpotent in this dual to the Lie algebra. And this is independent of the choice of X because this was a flat section. And so being nilpotent at some point means you're nilpotent at any point.
Should I ask this as like reducible connections? Is that like an algebraic translation of that? I used to assume on the local system side that the singular points have to have reducible connections.
Yeah. I mean, you should think about that.
If I set an unpacked group, what reducible was, would I get this?
No, like you get something different. You'll find that like the fiber to some bundle is like not just like G star, but maybe it's like the levy for the levy that like stabilizes your bundle, and you'll have some other like adjoint quotient. It'll look like this at like the point, the trivial bundle, and it'll get smaller and smaller as you're more and more reducible. And so this is a condition on all of these. So it's a condition that's like, it's like supported not just over the sort of reducible locus, but it's supported everywhere. Something I was going to say at the end, if I had time, was going to be about a different version of this Langlands conjecture where you have the gauge symmetry broken to a Levy subgroup, and there you'll get something that's not supported everywhere, but only supported when you're like sufficiently reducible. This is the definition of NG. So I've at least now told you what the object, what the category on the B side of geometric Langlands in this Savinkin-Gates-Coy formulation is. Okay? And so what I wanted to tell you in the last 10 minutes was how are we supposed to think of these conditions as arising from the action of the 4D local operators. Okay. So the condition is going to be, what I'm going to explain is that this should require come from asking for compatibility with a choice of vacuum state. And so what are vacua in a DQFT? Well, they're just points in the spectrum of the ring of local operators. And so why is this? In general, states are given by functionals from your local operators to R. And being a vacuum requires translation invariance and a cluster decomposition property. If you write it down, the cluster decomposition property in the topological case just says that your map to the ground field is a ring holomorphism. So these are maximal ideals. So the points in max spec, really. Okay. And so, what does it mean to look at support conditions in this algebra of local operators? So local operators act on category B of boundary conditions, like say along codimension 2 manifolds. And what does it mean to be supported? So let's look at the algebra of endomorphisms in B of some fixed object. This is an object. Models, observables in the bulk boundary system. With this boundary condition F. So this algebra like the localization of this algebra at some point V in this space of vacua is, or like contains those observables. Which can be defined on a small enough neighborhood of V.
Sure.
Picture. So I mean localization in the sense of just the module for a ring.
Ah, I used to be that.
Okay. So what, I don't know what picture would be helpful to draw, but I can put it say in words. So elements of this localization are going to be given by ratios, where the denominator is constrained to lie outside of this particular maximal ideal. And so in order for there to be, so the things that we can put in the denominator associated to this maximal ideal associated to the point V are things which don't vanish on a sufficiently small neighborhood of V.
In a small neighborhood,
yeah.
It makes sense in a little neighborhood
of this V. I mean, I don't know what the picture I was going to draw was going to be something like this, but I don't know what picture to draw.
I think you're sitting at V and sort of like find an effective fifth year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a nice way of. Okay. So it can be defined on a small neighborhood.
Yes, but
yeah.
What type of thing is obs to n? Are you quantum, so it's like a roughly EN algebra, or are you some classical?
Yes, I'm quantum, so it's a roughly EN algebra. And so I'm imagining, in particular, the example of this 2D theory where I have an E2 algebra acting on a DG category. And it's given by like an E2 map into the Hochschild cochains. What's this? You're making a face. Yeah.
Just sit here and make faces for
a while. Okay. Good. Okay. So we define, so we can consider the full subcategory of objects F where the localization of this algebra of endomorphisms is not zero. So if I write this localization is not zero. And so we think of this as the subcategory of boundary conditions compatible with the vacuum V, and that they give a non-trivial theory when you look.
Why is that the right definition of compatible?
Why is that the right definition of compatible? So I want to say, so if you're not in this subcategory, then that means that when you look in a small neighborhood of this vacuum, then the theory becomes trivial. And so this is these are the objects where you take this bulk boundary theory and you look in a neighborhood of the vacuum and you get some non-trivial data surviving.
Saying there is no identity group left, there's nothing left.
There's nothing left. There's nothing left if you're not in this. Yeah, so these are the things where something's left. Okay. So what's the upshot? So okay, so I'll state, I don't have very much time left, so I will state the main theorem and then try and say some words explaining it. Which is, I'll state it like this. I'll say that in the B-twisted N equals 4 theory, we have naive category of boundary conditions given by int co of flat G by somehow naive like categorified geometric quantization, canonical quantization of the moduli space of solutions. And the algebra of operators isomorphic to O of H star shifted by 2 mod W. So here H is, this is the Cartan subalgebra mod the Weyl group. you can check that this is the right thing classically, and then there's a calculation that this doesn't emit any E forward deformations, so it's exact at the quantum level. It wouldn't be true if we took the sort of the full like modulized stack of like local solutions to the equations of motion. We got G star mod G rather than H star mod W. But if you just look at global functions on these local states, then you just get the affinization, and this doesn't receive any quantum corrections. And there's a nice, there's a very nice description of the action of these operators using constructions in geometric representation theory, which I sadly don't have time to tell you. So this acts on intco flat G in a natural way. And so the theorem says that if we take the category of boundary conditions compatible with the vacuum zero in spec of this algebra, so in H star shifted on W, this is equivalent to the Rincon and Gates category. So if you work this out, this isn't, like from a naive point of view, this isn't very surprising. And somehow the reason comes from that the action of local operators factors through the action of, sorry, the action of 4D local operators factors through the action of 2D local operators as you reduce. And the way it factors through it, so 2D local operators are given by something like functions on this scheme of singularities, on this RFG. And there's a nice, and the way the map factors is by pullback along a map. And there's a shift by 2, which you really need to keep track of to do this correctly. So what is this map? This takes one of these Arthur parameters, this P Nabla phi. You evaluate phi at some point to get an element of G star mod G, and then you apply the eigenvalue map, the Chevalier restriction, to get a point in H star mod W. If you pull back inclusion of zero, what you get is exactly this global nilpotent cone. And so, okay, so dually, the action of local operators, functions on here, factors through the action of functions up here by pulling back. And the condition of being supported at zero with respect to this action is equivalent to the condition of being supported along the global nilpotent cone with respect to this action. And that's just the definition of nilpotent singular supports. Now, that's the cartoon. Like, somehow there's it doesn't work quite that simply, but this is like the reason why you would expect something like this to be true. Okay, and one more remark that I'll make, and then I'll stop because I'm out of time. So if you keep track of these degree shifts by 2 and these degree 2 parameters, you can, the algebra of operators that acts, you can think of it as not being this algebra, but a larger operator where you enjoin like an invertible degree 2 parameter. And inside of spec of this, we have a nice classical part. We have H star mod W with no shift. And now we don't just have this one point. We now have lots of points. And so you can ask, what's the category of boundary conditions compatible with some other vacuum in this sense, some other point in H star mod W? And there's a nice, we can describe it, but we have a nice, we have some evidence for a conjectural, nicer way of thinking about it. So this is the conjecture. The category compatible with a vacuum, let's say V in H star mod W with no shift, is equivalent to, again, an Rincon gate score category, but not for the group G, but for some other group, let me call it LV, where LV is the stabilizer, so the subgroup of G is the stabilizer of V. And so you see some conjecturally a gauge symmetry breaking, where you move in the moduli of vacua away from this special point, you move down in the stratification, and the gauge symmetry is broken to a Levy subgroup that stabilizes that particular choice of vacuum. Okay, I'm a couple of minutes over, so I'll stop here. Thank you.
Questions for Chris?
Can you see the vacuum choice on the other side too?
So this is quite complicated. And the reason it's complicated is because, so remember, this category with nilpotent singular support matches up to the whole category of D modules. And so if you want to match up, like you want an analog of what I was calling the naive category of boundary conditions, you need something strictly larger than D modules to work in. And so there's a conjectural answer for what this should be. The Gates-Gouy calls it renormalized D modules. And what it is, it's the thing like generated by the its space of compact objects. And the compact objects are those, there are certain like D modules on bun G which are pullbacks of coherent D modules under certain maps that forget the gauge symmetry, that forget the symmetry action. So it's nice to describe it in the case of local operators. So the local story, you have D modules that are equivariant on the affine Grassmannian. And so inside of here, so there's a map that's forgets the equivariant structure, which is the D modules in the affine Grassmannian, and you take objects in here that are pullbacks of coherent D modules down here, and then you take the thing generated by that. So this is the Gates-Gouy calls this renormalized D modules. So you can try and tell this story, but you have to like working with now like compatibility with a vacuum in this larger category, this larger sort of choice of this functional analysis condition. And I don't know, and I'd really like to know how one might physically motivate this renormalized, like this choice, this thing that matches up to all incoherent sheaves. And I don't really know how to think about this. The other reason it's more difficult to work with for this on this B side, you can describe concretely the postural cochains. Like on the D module side, there is no description of like. Of the Hostral cohomology of D modules on an arbitrary stack. Like you can do it if you have a scheme modulo a torus, but if you have non-abelian stabilizers, there's just no known answer. And so you have to, you lose certain structure that you use, like this, the fact that you had this map from this scheme of singularities in that you had on the B side and you don't have access to on the A side. It makes it more difficult.
So this, given the conjecture, is it a subcategory of the other one, or are they just different subcategories of integral?
There'll be a functor, and yes. Like how you should think about it, the category that you get compatibly with a vacuum is not a subcategory, it's like it's embedded differently inside of all incoherent D modules, and you should think of like if I drew this pullback square,
yes.
And I didn't take zero, I took another point. You get something else where your Arthur parameters are conjugate to some specified element. So this is like these things kind of sweep out the whole category of incoherent sheaves. And the conjecture is that if you take this point, then it's equivalent to this thing that is a subcategory of the certainly there's a functor. I think it's an embedding. Of the thing for the whole group. Yeah.
In terms of like this conjecture and so on, do you have a picture of what the kind of Eisenstein functors were doing?
A picture of what the Eisenstein functors are doing. Oh, I see. So are you asking? Is this so? There's
like that. You said that I presume is the target of the Eisenstein functor for the Levy correspondence.
Well, it's the source. You can do it. Yeah, that's a good question. So we have this family of categories for which you have some conjectural Langmuir duality living over this space of vacua. But then you also have these Eisenstein series functors that relate different fibers. I don't really have a good answer to how these two different pieces of structure should interact with one another. Phil and I have talked about it a bit, but I don't think we've come to any satisfactory conclusions.
Would you be happy with this? Einstein picture, they're like separately brothers.
I'm not sure. I think I need to just understand what the definition of Eisenstein factor is, because there are all these push backs and push forwards.
Yeah.
Hide a lot of stuff.
Okay.
Well, thank us again.